process and plundering. It means ensuring that states are independent. It means we support less developed countries.
The Italian government has declared a state of emergency because 31,000 refugees have arrived into the country since January. During the debate, the point was made that 1 million Ukrainian refugees have arrived into another EU nation, Poland, with no state of emergency declared. The question has been asked, is it the case that those arriving into Italy simply have the wrong coloured skin for EU authorities? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
It is the early hours of the morning and people from all walks of life have flocked to mosques and open-air spaces in the Gaza Strip to perform the special prayer of Eid al-Fitr. Eid al-Fitr, which marks the end of Ramadan, is a major religious holiday for Muslims around the world. People celebrate the end of the holy month and thank God for giving them the strength to fast for 30 days.
Despite the martyrs and injured and the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip, we try to overcome our pain and celebrate the Eid. As the Prophet told us that there are two joys for a fasting person. The joy he feels when breaking his fast is one of them. So we have to celebrate our Eid.
This year's Eid comes in the aftermath of historic Israeli violations against Palestinian worshippers in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The atrocities sparked numerous anti-regime operations in the occupied West Bank. The assaults also drew a firm response from resistance groups in the Gaza Strip and Lebanon. Tens of rockets were rained on Israeli positions in retaliation.
This Eid is very special due to the unity of the Arab and Islamic countries in solidarity of the Palestinian cause. All the fronts are united against the Israeli regime and this multiplies our happiness. We hope that next year we will pray Eid al-Fitr prayers in the middle of the holy Al-Aqsa compound.
Hamas spokesperson stated that the Palestinian resistance from Al-Quds to the Gaza Strip has proven its unity on all the fronts. He pledged that Palestinians would not remain silent in the face of the Israeli attempts at Judaizing the Al-Quds.
The conflict over the identity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque is still not resolved. Palestinian people, along with resistance groups, will keep up with their legitimate struggle to eventually make it clear that Al-Aqsa's identity is an Islamic, Arab, and Palestinian one. They will stand against the religious war Israel has launched against Islamic and Christian holy sites in Al-Quds.
Men, women, and children, who usually wear new clothes, but especially for the Eid, celebrate the joyous occasion by distributing sweets after the prayers. Celebrations then move on to feast, festivities, and family visits.
After displaying their unity in the face of the Israeli violations during the fasting month of Ramadan, Palestinians across the occupied Palestinian territories are sending their message on the first day of Eid al-Fitr that they will remain steadfast in their struggle against the Israeli regime. Al Al-Asi, Gaza.
Eid al-Fitr, or the Festival of Breaking the Fast, which marks the end of the holy month of Ramadan, is celebrated in Afghanistan like all other Muslim countries. The joyful event has a special place in Islam.
Eid al-Fitr is a gift from God. As our Prophet has said, my Ummah has two joyful events in a year. On this day, the Islamic tradition is to wear neat clothes and perfume, then go to mosque and participate in Eid prayer, which is performed in collective form to bring more unity and equality among Muslims. I'm so happy to come here today and congratulate all Muslims on this Eid.
People prepare for the Eid several days ahead by buying sweets and pastry. On Eid al-Fitr Day, people celebrate the Eid by visiting relatives.
Now that the prayer is done, people usually pray for their loved ones who aren't alive. Then people visit their relatives and celebrate the Eid by eating foods.
Eid al-Fitr isn't just a day for joy, but also a day to take care of the poor. Zakat al-Fitr is an amount of money paid to the poor by heads of the families in Muslim countries.
The ones who have financial ability are obligated to pay the Zakat al-Fitr in Islam. They should give the money to the poor, orphans, widows, and other people in need. This money is usually paid to the poor relatives of the payer.
In Muslim countries, depending on the location, the sighting of the crescent moon that determines Eid al-Fitr varies.
Therefore, this year some countries declared Friday as Eid al-Fitr, while in some other nations Saturday is the Eid.
After a month of abstinence from eating and drinking from dawn to dusk, Muslims regard Eid al-Fitr as a heavenly gift. That is why fasting is forbidden on Eid al-Fitr. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
Iran's defense ministry has made mass delivery of new combat and reconnaissance drones to Iran's army in a ceremony attended by Defense Minister Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Gharayi Ashtiani, as well as the commanders of different divisions of the Iranian army. With the goal of increasing the power of the drone fleet of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army, 200 new indigenously built drones were delivered to the ground force, the navy, the air force, and the air defense force. Minister of Defense and Armed Forces Logistics of Iran hailed the country's advances in drone production, saying that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence.
The more powerful the Islamic Republic's deterrent power, the better it can help countries that seek security and stability in the region. Certainly, Iran can help them because its military prowess has contributed to providing peace and stability in the region, and the drones that were delivered to the armed forces today are part of the country's defensive power. This trend will continue.
Iranian experts have made giant strides in boosting defense power by producing various equipment, including different types of drones. Iran's drone program has become a significant deterrent in the region due to the country's ability to conduct combat and reconnaissance missions using these UAVs. Also, Iran's army commander, Major General Abdurrahim Mousavi, highlighted the growing power of the drones used by army units.
With different ranges, sizes, and weights, these drones can perform all kinds of missions for the Islamic Republic of Iran's army. The experience of using drones in new battlefields has shown that they have a significant and decisive effect. This enables the Iranian army to have the upper hand in the battlefield.
The Navy will have a drone range of 2,000 kilometers with the addition of these drones to its fleet. This means that our operational radius will increase significantly. And in addition, due to capabilities of the drones, we can stalk and hunt subsurface targets such as submarines.
The ground forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army itself is a manufacturer of UAVs. We build drones in different scales, from large to small, they can have strategic effects on the battlefield. In general, drones are a unique and effective weapon and can improve our country's combat power.
There has been very good cooperation with the Defense Ministry. We do appreciate all their efforts. These are operational drones that will definitely be effective in improving the operational power of the Air Force. We plan to use UAVs and planes with a single central command to engage targets.
The delivery of 200 new drones to the Army is part of an agreement with the Defense Ministry on the promotion of drone power and the equipment carried by the unmanned military aircraft. Last year, the Iranian Defense Ministry and the Army signed a strategic agreement. On their phase one of the agreement, the Defense Ministry has undertaken to equip the Army with 1,000 drones.
It is clear that greater cooperation between China and friendly nations is making many Western leaders nervous. Analysts say US dominance is being eroded and a new world order is taking shape. The subject of EU-China relations has just been debated in the European Parliament.
The Chinese Communist Party's actions have now caught up with its stated ambitions and the hardening of China's overall strategic posture over the last years.
A clear majority in the European Parliament claim Moscow and Beijing have malign ambitions.
Russia and China have the same goal, to destroy the development of the democratic world, because democracy is a threat to both regimes.
There are those, however, who warn against provoking China.
First, you led us into conflict with Russia because it's in the interests of the USA. You forced us to buy more expensive gas from the United States. Now you are pushing us into confrontation with China because the US sees China as a threat to its world dominance.
Western leaders always turn to sanctions when they disagree with a foreign government, but they are personally insulated from the impact, experts point out.
They are well paid. Do they feel the blowback of the sanctions? Do they know what is going on in the shops? Do they know that people like you and me are constantly overcharged with all kinds of goods?
A number of lawmakers are urging EU leaders not to follow the US down a destructive path.
US financial capital wants to make profits in China and in Europe. And driving a wedge between the EU and China is a good way of going about it for them.
Trade between the EU and China is currently valued at 2.3 billion euro per day.
According to many economists, ordinary EU citizens will pay a huge price if the 27-country bloc falls into line with the anti-China agenda that is being developed and promoted by the United States. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
At a rate of 6%, inflation in France is still at its worst since the 1980s. However, new data shows that all-important food prices continue to push to unseen levels, having leapt a whopping 16% since last year.
I'm a shopkeeper, but I also grow wheat and raise cattle. So I can tell you that those who are raising their prices the most are the big corporations. The small producers suffered and tried for a long time not to raise their prices. But now everyone is raising their prices. For example, chicken is up 30% this year.
From April through June, there will be price caps on certain goods, following last month's acceptance by major retailers and middlemen of a government initiative. It's expected to cost them hundreds of millions of euros. However, many say they can afford it. Ever-increasing corporate profits have been the norm across Europe since 2009. And in the post-COVID world, many analysts say that corporate price gouging, government-approved speculation, and stockholder profit hoarding are the hidden driver of Europe's high prices.
Il faut prendre des mesures autoritaires.
We must take authoritarian measures. There's simply no other way. We must implement price controls, the indexing of wages to prices, and much more. But a government must have the will to do such things. And that takes us back to the necessity of choosing an alternative political path than our current model.
Polls show that 96% of France agrees with the statement that some suppliers are opportunistically taking advantage of inflation. Opportunism aside, the soaring prices are the enduring result of the West's failed sanctions campaign against Russia over the long-term unrest in the Ukraine. Instead of sowing peace and reaping low prices, the European Union is finding that belligerence backfires, and especially for the average person. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Israel's atrocities against Palestinians have intensified during the holy month of Ramadan, including the recent savage attack on worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. The regime in Tel Aviv has been condemned in the European Parliament.
We haven't as much as sanctioned them in any way. We have occupied territories where we import products from. We have sent no signals to Israel that we condemn what they are doing.
Compared to previous debates on the subject, it appears more and more EU legislators are willing to call Israel out.
We see growing violence, expansion plans for illegal settlements, a de facto annexation turning into a covert de jure annexation, daily discrimination against Palestinians, demolitions.
It is clear that the regime still enjoys much support in the European Parliament.
To be honest, I feel strong sympathy with Israel.
However, many EU lawmakers express support for protesters who have been taking to the streets of Israel in huge numbers.
The Prime Minister has to guarantee that hate speech against political opponents and extremist positions expressed by cabinet ministers do not further encourage a circle of violence.
Campaigners suggest regime members are currently under pressure like never before.
The Zionist entity is in a serious crisis, mainly because of the Palestinian resistance, but also because of the resistance in the region, from Iran to Iraq to Al-Yemen to Lebanon, and also Palestinians' diaspora.
It's claimed anyone with a mobile phone who criticizes Israeli authorities is now a potential target.
The Pegasus spyware developed and distributed by an Israeli company is being widely used to target human rights defenders, journalists and political opponents across the world, including in our union.
Despite the obvious challenges, rights campaigners remain optimistic.
They insist it's not a matter of if Palestinians will ever see freedom, liberation and victory, but when. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The price of a month's worth of rent in the British capital has soared by an average of more than 16% over the past year, with the average rent price reaching a record $2,910 a month, the highest in the country. In other big cities, such as in Manchester, it's gone up to more than 20%, and in Birmingham, more than 17%. Alex, who asked not to be identified, shared a house in West London with his partner and another couple for 2 years, but had to move when the rent skyrocketed.
The contract that we originally had was 3 years with a two-year break clause. Our original contract state being £2,800 a month, but we had an email from our landlord stating that it's going to be increased to £4,000, which I think is a little over 40%.
Property experts say higher mortgage interest rates and taxation are forcing landlords to either increase the rent or withdraw their properties from the market, sending renters fighting over available properties.
It's really not a good time for tenants and renters in general. We've seen that any one property will have multiple offers. Just recently, we did a viewing on a flat, two-bedroom flat in Ruislip, West London, where we did 14 viewings and we have 14 offers.
But what is the reason behind the increase in demand? A housing deficit is one reason. Britain has a backlog of 4.3 million homes that are missing from the national housing market, as they were never built. Another is a rise in net migration.
So now that's because of Ukraine, refugees coming in from there. It's also because of the situation with Hong Kong and because of the increases in the numbers of international students coming into the UK as well. Now, with these groups of people, they tend to move into places like London or big cities like Birmingham or Manchester.
Calls for a rent freeze are growing, but that is yet to happen. And pressures on the rental market are not expected to ease anytime soon. Saeed Pariza, London.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick, and healed, and made well, and afflicted, and sat upon the throne, and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome. Tonight, we are putting the spotlight on the continuous rise in global military expenditure in the recent years and the 3.7% increase in 2022 alone, reaching an all-time high of $2.24 trillion, according to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. By any standard, this could mean nothing but an increasingly insecure world. In this edition, we will discuss the reasons behind this sharp increase and its ramifications. To do that, we are joined by Harley Schanger, spokesman of the International Schiller Institute, who is joining us from Germany. We're also joined by Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist from Bristol.
This is The Spotlight.
The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you very much to both of you, gentlemen. Let's start with Mr. Schlanger, who's joining us from Germany. Now, the Cold War levels of military expenditure have returned to Central and Western Europe. Their military expenditure has reached $345 billion in 2022. What does this signify?
Well, it signifies the Europeans giving in to enormous pressure from the United States. And this actually started before the Ukraine situation. It was President Trump who started putting pressure on NATO countries to spend more money, saying that the United States is paying too much of a burden for the alliance with Europe. But the Europeans were somewhat reluctant to do that. There was a lot of opposition to it. And then along came the decision to bring NATO into a war against Russia and Ukraine. And at that point, the pressure really started ramping up with the regular meetings going on at Rammstein, the so-called Ukraine contact group. And also, of course, Zelensky was built up as a great hero who was deployed personally to go before parliaments, to go before NATO, to demand an increase in spending. So this is partly what's driven the European budgets. And it's occurring at a point when the economies of many of the European nations are very stretched. So I don't think this kind of increase can continue. Of course, the biggest increase has been in the United States, but we can come to that in a moment.
Exactly. We are going to have to discuss how this affects the domestic economies of both the Western European countries and also the United States. But since you brought up NATO, I would like to address Mr. Gosling. Mr. Gosling, NATO's expansion in its military spending has reached 1.96 billion euros. This represents a 25.8% increase compared to 2022 alone. How far do you think Europeans can go with this kind of expenditure?
Well, I think there'll be a lot of Europeans asking the same question. I'm scratching my head here, really scratching my head, to try and think of which leaders it was that it was elected that asked the public when they were elected that they wanted to boost military spending by massive amounts. And I don't think I can remember a single one. So you have to ask the question, is this a democratic decision that's being made? Or is this another dictatorial decision from the top? So have the people been consulted? The answer is no. The other question I have is, what do they know that we don't? Why is it that these elites in the West particularly, and of course in China, there's been big increases in there, and Japan too, are they planning a war? Are they planning a third world war? I think what's going on in the background is the failure of trade has consequences. What happens is when your economy is failing and you can't compete anymore, like the United States and many countries in Europe, they get jealous of China. They decide they want to go and grab those resources rather than to deal fairly. So that is why I think we're seeing increased militarization is largely due to all the economic, you know, basically as the economies fail, people start to pick up the gun. They start to pick up the sledgehammer and decide they want to fight over things. So the failures of the international finance, so for example, the Bank for International Settlements in Switzerland, the International Monetary Fund, these failures are having consequences around the world. And I don't think many of the people that run these organizations really care. And they don't seem to have made sure in any way that the general economy is working well. So, for example, we've got something called finance capitalism here in the West, which is allowing the hedge funds and the private equity firms to literally buy up anything they want, including political parties, including the press, including infrastructure, national infrastructure. And this is being bought and sold on an international scale. And so the individual governments have got less and less ability to actually, the people we elect, to steer policy. And that leaves a vacuum. That vacuum's being filled by people like the Bilderbergers and NATO, with Bilderberg is basically the political wing of NATO. And by the way, they're meeting in a few weeks' time in Lisbon. And there's very little, if any, democratic accountability with these people. They were set up after the Second World War by a former SS officer, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, to really steer and control the political policy and the who was going to be the leaders in the NATO countries. So I think the public is on the back foot here. And what we've got is we've got an elite that's decided, well, the Chinese have beaten us completely, hands down, in international trade. So we're going to start to pick up the gun. And that's why we've seen these enormous... I mean, the United States is now nearly $900 billion they're spending on weapons as compared to the next one down is less than a third of that, which is $300 billion, which is the Chinese. So you can see, I think much of the money that's being spent in the United States, by the way, is being wasted on equipment, which when it's actually tested in a fight, will not do very well because the money's been going to friends of friends and people who are in the military clique. So that's, I think, basically the backdrop to this. Economies failing, trade failing, and therefore the military are cashing in as much as they can. And by the way, it's not the British that will be building these tanks because our steel industry has virtually been shut down here. We've got the Chinese and the Indians owning British steel, the British steel industry. And so we're having to now to buy almost everything, all this military equipment to replace that's going to Ukraine from the United States. And of course, that's part of the policy, is more and more wealth going to the United States. And if there is a war, it will happen on European soil, far away from the people making the money in America.
We're going to have a situation very similar to the end of World War II. And of course, based on the statistics that Mr. Gosling just mentioned, Mr. Schlanger, the United States is by far the world's biggest military spender, not to mention that it is also dealing with very high inflation and major domestic economic issues. Still, it remains the highest spender of military expenditure in the world by far. As Mr. Gosling also pointed out, the next in line is China, with which is actually three times less than that expenditure. So what do you think is exactly the policy behind this? Do you agree with Mr. Gosling's theory about a failing economy and the military trying to compensate for that?
Well, I generally agree with that, but I take it a little bit further. Why is there a war in Ukraine right now against Russia? We're seeing a shift of the world economy to Asia and the global south. This is what the BRICS represents, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa alliance. This is the move toward de-dollarization, the move away from the petrodollar system. And it's happening because the Western policies have been based on looting the poorer countries and using NATO military so-called out-of-area deployments to crush any nation which resists being looted, as in the case of Iraq or Libya. Now, the Russians and the Chinese have been unwilling to give up their sovereignty to the international banks, to the, as he mentioned, the International Monetary Fund, the Bank for International Settlements. The Great Reset is really about imposing a top-down banker's dictatorship worldwide on every country. But you can't, you can do that to Iraq or Libya, and if they resist, you can crush them. But Russia and China are strong enough economically and militarily that they can't be crushed that way. And so as a result, the decision was made to go after Russia through Ukraine. This was a decision that goes back many, many, many years. But in the most recent period, they tried to destroy Russia and break it up and steal its raw materials in the 1990s. Then when Putin came in, they couldn't do it. So yes, the military buildup is driven by the collapse of the economy and the idea that, well, military expenditures can somehow make up for some of the loss in industry that's being outsourced and so on. Now, one other point just worth noting on the U.S. economy. While the military budget is now at about $858 billion, that leaves out a whole section of the nuclear projects, which are under the Department of Energy, and the CIA, which no one knows exactly what's spent there, and other so-called black box operations. It's probably closer to $1 trillion being spent now, and the reason is because the U.S. military is convinced that assuming the war in Ukraine comes to an end, and I think they're deluded to think that they'll be able to defeat Russia, but assuming it comes to an end, they're preparing for war with China. And some military people are saying by 2025, some are saying by 2027. People who are sane would say, why are we going into these wars when we can't afford health care in the United States? We can't afford infrastructure. We can't afford education. And so this, I assume, is going to become a big issue in the United States and in Western Europe, where governments are becoming increasingly unpopular and people are going out into the streets to protest. So the military budget is a consequence of a failed economic policy, but an economic policy that's driven by the needs of corporate cartels, including the so-called military-industrial complex.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Exactly, and this all seems to be feeding that military-industrial complex you just mentioned. Mr. Gosling, let's put the 750 overseas military bases of the United States in more than 80 countries in this mix, and obviously the money that needs to be spent there.
Well, look, we had a fantastic protest here in Britain, I can tell you, just up the road in Gloucestershire at the time of the Iraq War. Around about 1,500 of us from around this area collected there, and actually with in front of a bunch of dancing girls who were fantastic, by the way, dancing to disco music, we wrenched open the gates of that US Air Force base at Fairford, and hundreds of people poured in, running around all over the place. And the reason we do that is because we really don't, as British people, want to have these US air bases in Britain. Now, that is not happening right now. That's because I think the Stop the War coalition in London has become rather neutered and they're not understanding what's going on in Ukraine. But the point remains that there is an enormous feeling here in Britain that we don't want these US military. Basically, they make us a target for Russian nuclear weapons. And so why would we want American bombers, etc., based here in Britain? And there are many countries in Europe that feel the same. The trouble is that they are no longer democracies. These countries are basically occupied and colonized by the US empire. I think we also have to try and understand what is... I mean, obviously, the situation in Ukraine is unwinnable. And what it's doing is it's dragging hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian males to their deaths. Why would the West want to do that? Because this seems to be a bizarre and incredibly insane and actually evil policy. So the answer, I think, is simply that they want to create as much carnage as possible in order to convince the European nations to come to Ukraine's aid. So there is a very, I think, dark philosophy here behind much of what's going on, including the idea that the solution to what's happening in Ukraine should be more weapons rather than peace talks. These sorts of solutions we're getting in the migrant crisis, the COVID crisis, we had a similar thing. We're getting a similar thing with the climate crisis, is that we're being given solutions which are actually making things worse. And there is this, I think, in almost insane dark element, the same sort of thing that we saw emerging in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, where the completely innocent people, like the Jews at the time, are blamed for the problems of the actual state and the fascist, that is, the corporate predators at the same time. So, I mean, unless we can really deal with these individuals who are trying to actually deliberately make things worse, people will say to me sometimes, well, they wouldn't do that. Why would they do that? They make money out of crises. And that's what we're now seeing, is almost addiction to disaster capitalism, where companies can make absolute fortunes, as, for example, the vaccine companies did during the COVID crisis, out of something which is not necessarily making things any better at all. It's all about using the press to convince people and the governments to make lots of money. And the problem is, the main problem in all of this is, once you have weak governments, the arms industries and the arms manufacturers are able to actually create money-making wars almost wherever and whenever they want. And so we need some real serious pushback against this, what is called an accelerationist policy, the Dark Enlightenment policy, which it seems to be pervading so many of our governments, supposed democratic governments in the West. So the one problem that the elites do have, though, with the including obviously these arms companies, is that they can't really fight two fronts at the same time. They can't take on and fight Russia and their own domestic populations at the same time. They're certainly going to try, but one or other of those fronts is going to break, and we'll see which one it is first.
Exactly. Now, Mr. Schlanger, let's take a look at the Eastern Hemisphere. Let's go to the Far East, and, well, the tensions that are escalating there. We see the U.S. continuously holding military drills there, creating more tension, and, of course, not to mention the military bases that are, of course, located in that region also. How would you analyze that U.S. presence in the region? Is actually the United States looking for a future war, as it was mentioned earlier in our program, in that region?
Oh, absolutely. They've said it. Admiral Charles Richard, who's the head of STRATCOM, the main U.S. military base deployment, said a big one is coming. It's approaching us, and it'll be here before 2027. Now, here's the problem they have. The Chinese, by international law, Taiwan is part of China. It's recognized as part of China. If the U.S. starts sending weapons into Taiwan, as they're starting to say they will, and even troops into Taiwan, that would be the equivalent of what happened when the Soviet missiles were deployed into Cuba in 1962. How do you think the Chinese are going to react to that? They've already made it clear they will not allow those weapons to go in. So what's the Western strategy? Well, the idea is to try and bluff the Chinese by having a global NATO. That is, move NATO into the Indo-Pacific region. And the problem they have is that the Japanese can be scared into it. Remember, the Japanese allied with Hitler in World War II. The South Koreans are terrified of North Korea. And since no one's talking to the North Koreans anymore, the South Koreans have been brought into this alliance. And Australia, which is part of the Five Eyes, the British system, just signed a nuclear submarine agreement, which won't come into effect for maybe 10 or 12 years, but nevertheless is based on providing additional weaponry into that arena. Now, that's what global NATO is. That's what the so-called Quad is. That's what the AUKUS agreement is. But here's the problem they have. India is not going along with it. China is certainly not going along with it. Indonesia is not going along with it. Malaysia is not going along with it. And I think sooner or later the Philippines are going to break from this policy. In any case, the global South is moving away from the dollar system, and the threats of U.S. military intervention are becoming less real to them because they're seeing that the U.S. is, in a sense, paralyzed by the situation in Ukraine. It's one thing to send a lot of weapons in there, but even the U.S. military equipment and production is not capable of providing even the weapons needed by Ukraine to fight the Russians. Your other guest mentioned the situation in the United Kingdom. The Tobias Elwood from the Defense Committee of the House of Commons talked about British troops on the ground in Ukraine. Then he was asked, well, how long would you be able to supply them for? And he said, maybe 2 weeks. The British supply sector is incapable of producing. So the West is running up against reality. And reality is there's a shift in the world toward Eurasia. And I think Iran is a part of that. I think the what we saw with the Saudi agreement with Iran, what we're seeing with the bringing Syria back into the Arab world, this is a change that's catching Western policymakers completely off guard. So they have this fantasy that they can flex their military muscles and countries will submit. But this is a changed world. And what we need is demand for negotiations in the Western world, in North America, in Western Europe. We need a population that stands up and fights the way leaders of some of the poorer countries in the world are standing up against the bullies of the military of the U.S., U.K., and NATO.
So we're running out of time, Mr. Gosling. In order to wrap up our discussion, how do you see the future of this whole military expenditure going?
Well, it's only going upwards, as far as I can see. And unfortunately, you have to look at things like the derivative markets, because the gambling casino, which is the way the international stock markets are now run, actually does encourage speculation against war. So, for example, if you're doing insider dealing, if you happen to know that a particular person is going to get assassinated or, say, for example, the conflict in the Sudan is going to kick off, which, by the way, has been started by AFRICOM, it seems to me, because the Russians wanted a naval base in Port Sudan. We don't get any analysis of that geopolitics here in the press in this part of the world. So I think really only upwards. And this is, I think, the absolute disease at the base of this is finance capitalism, is the fact that that the war today has simply become a chip on a gambling table, and people can make fantastic amounts of money at it. Stand back, particularly over in the United States, and watch the money rolling in as people die. And that, I think, is ultimately at the bottom of it. And also, it's the part of the conflict in Ukraine, because the Russians are not going to put up with that way of doing things. If the oligarchs and the gangsters get their fingers near the Kremlin, they get their fingers chopped off. I'm afraid in London, most of the political parties are welcoming finance capitalists, hedge fund managers, private equity firms to their lunches, and they seem to think that's a good thing. And those are the two different systems, I think, which are fighting in Ukraine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joining us from Bristol. And Harley Schlanger, a spokesman of the International Schiller Institute from Germany. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for sharing your thoughts and views with us this edition of Spotlight.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
Western brands are disappearing from Russian malls. Calculations show that the share of foreign products has dropped by half since late 2021. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, the presence of foreign brands in Moscow's largest shopping centers has dropped significantly over the past year amid an exit of Western companies from the Russian market, according to data shared by consultancy firm Nico Lears. According to the company's calculations, at the end of the first quarter of 2023, the share of foreign brands in Moscow's 12 largest shopping malls was 35.9%. That figure is almost half than in the fourth quarter of 2021, prior to the start of Russia's special operation in Ukraine and the Western sanctions that followed. Analysts noted that the spaces previously owned by foreign brands have been actively occupied by Russian retailers, both long-established and those that bought out the businesses of departing companies. Meanwhile, new foreign brands from Turkey and other friendly nations have also boosted their presence in Russia. According to Nico Lears' estimates, since the beginning of 2022, 56 such companies have announced their intention to launch businesses in the country. 10 of them have already opened stores in Russia, and 5 are in the final stages of launching. Analysts noted that 64% of these brands are Turkish. Anna Nikandrova, a partner at Nico Lears, stated that Russia remains an interesting market for foreign brands opening their first stores both in Moscow and other regions. "We are already witnessing a good pace of new projects opening in quality shopping centers, and we expect that by the end of the year, this dynamic will continue." At the same time, it is worth noting the high activity on the part of Russian brands, which last year embraced the additional opportunities which opened for them. She added, "A number of retailers with ambitious strategies received the opportunity to implement them in the current situation, and a number of other companies in turn adjusted their development plans towards a more rapid expansion." According to data from the Kiev School of Economics, KSE Leave Russia project, out of 3,157 foreign firms that operated in Russia prior to the start of the conflict, only 215 have so far exited the market, which is less than 7%. Russian authorities, meanwhile, have been actively reorienting both imports and exports from Western countries and companies to new markets and introducing other trade mechanisms to help keep the domestic market well stocked. According to Reuters, in February, President Vladimir Putin waved a sarcastic farewell to foreign businesses which have left Russia over the conflict in Ukraine, saying their departure would benefit Russian companies. Speaking to senior officials at a meeting broadcast on state television, Putin said those companies had suffered major losses as a result of exiting a large and lucrative market. "Today, many of Western brands, under pressure from their governments, are leaving our market. All the best to them," he said, briefly waving his hand in a farewell gesture. Putin added, "Nothing in Russia has collapsed and nothing is falling apart. Our companies and entrepreneurs are picking up these enterprises and even entire sectors and continue this work very successfully." We'll be right back. scores of Western companies, from energy producers to food and clothing chains, have left Russia in the last year, amid unprecedented sanctions imposed by Western countries. Some departed firms have sold their assets to local investors for nominal fees. Western sanctions over the crisis have upended some sectors of Russia's economy, cutting its biggest banks from the SWIFT financial network, curbing its access to technology, and restricting its ability to export oil. Moscow says its economy is resilient and that sanctions have boomeranged against the West by driving up inflation and energy prices. Putin also said recently that Russia should build a system for developing drones and aim to become a source of technology and competence.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.